I'm looking across the table at you right now, and, well, you are furiously making notes on a classic yellow legal pad.
Yeah, I mean, I can't help it. It helps me focus.
Which is incredibly fitting, actually, because as we welcome you to today's deep dive, the environment around us it's shifting. We're starting in this very traditional, heavy, wood-paneled courtroom.
Right, you can almost smell the polished mahogany and, you know, the old paper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But right now, those wooden panels are dissolving. They're sliding away to reveal an incredible high-tech geometric space.
It's completely transforming.
It really is. It's suddenly filled with glowing star charts, complex radar graphs, and data visualizations projecting in midair. It looks less like a courthouse and more like a control room for navigating multidimensional space.
Which is honestly the ideal architecture for what we are doing today.
Oh, absolutely.
We are taking a concept that feels incredibly ancient, deeply human, and we are going to map the underlying mathematics and geometry of it.
I am so ready for this, and we are so glad you're here with us for this. Our mission today is to unpack a stack of over 20 research papers on Zenodo, exploring a fascinating working paper on how our legal systems actually measure fairness.
It's a huge topic.
It really is. And we are going out into the deep water immediately. A judge looks at a defendant and says, "My hands are tied. The law requires this sentence." Everyone in the room knows it isn't quite right. The circumstances are unusual. The intent was complex. The community impact is severe. But the law doesn't have room for those inputs. That moment where everyone knows the judgment is legal, but not just has a precise technical name, the XY mismatch. The case was richer than the law can express.
Three things today. First, why justice is a high-dimensional concept and law is a finite-dimensional compression of it and what gets lost in that compression. Second, why Western and Eastern legal traditions made opposite design choices about which dimensions to keep and why neither choice is wrong. Third, what this means the moment AI enters the courtroom, because a sentencing algorithm inherits the null space of the law it was trained on, and that null space was never specified.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with this idea of justice as a high-dimensional concept. Because, you know, when we talk about justice in our everyday lives, we usually talk about it like it's a volume knob.
Right, just turning it up or down.
Yeah, like a single scale of good versus bad.
Yeah.
But the source material completely shatters that. Justice is actually this massive, sprawling composite of at least eight distinct dimensions.
Eight dimensions, yeah, at a minimum.
Right. You have fairness, which is equal treatment under equal circumstances. You have proportionality, making sure the punishment fits the crime. But then you also have rehabilitation, deterrence, victim restoration, community harmony, intent, and circumstance. It's a massive matrix of moving variables.
And the fundamental problem of any legal system is that it simply cannot operate in eight dimensions simultaneously.
It's too much data.
Exactly. By its very nature, a legal code has to take that sprawling, high-dimensional reality and squash it down into a finite set of rules. It has to codify human behavior.
Right.
And mathematically speaking, whenever you take something with a high number of dimensions and force it into a system with a lower number of dimensions, you perform a lossy compression. You permanently throw away information.
Wow. I want to make sure I'm visualizing this correctly. It sounds like, well, like taking a massive high-resolution raw photograph.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Because in a raw file, you have all the data, millions of colors, depth, shadow details, highlight details. But you can't email a file that big easily. So you save it as a low-res JPEG.
And you lose the nuance.
Exactly. Suddenly, the nuanced gradient of the sky is just one block of flat blue. The depth is gone.
So is the law essentially just rasterizing human behavior into a JPEG?
That is exactly what it's doing.
Yeah, because if I'm being honest, if compression destroys that much critical information, why do we tolerate it? Why build a justice system that intentionally blinds itself to the reality of human life?
What's fascinating here is that this dimensional compression isn't a glitch. It is a structural requirement for society to function.
Wait, a requirement?
Yeah. If you want a system that can be applied predictably across millions of citizens, you simply do not have the resources to evaluate all eight dimensions every single time.
I mean, I guess that makes sense practically.
Imagine if a routine traffic stop for speeding required a 3-week sociological and psychological audit of the driver's intent, their childhood, and community harmony.
The infrastructure just isn't there. The system would collapse under its own weight.
Exactly the issue. Let's look at a concrete example from the papers. Imagine a man who steals food from a supermarket.
He is a first-time offender. He has zero income, and his child hasn't eaten in 2 days. The food he took cost exactly $14. The massive corporate grocery store's financial loss is completely negligible.
Right.
He turns himself in out of guilt, and 3 weeks later, he secures a stable job.
Okay, so if we look at that through the eight dimensions of justice, his intent was survival, not malice. The victim impact is mathematically near zero. His rehabilitation potential is incredibly high because he already got a job. The circumstance is structural poverty.
You see all of that because you are looking at the raw file.
Oh, I see.
But the law compresses all of that rich, multidimensional reality into a single flattened dimension. Theft. Did you take property that wasn't yours, guilty or not guilty?
Wow. Just a flat blue pixel?
Yes. The measurement instrument of the legal code captures that one specific dimension, and the other seven dimensions disappear into what mathematicians and physicists call the null space.
The null space. So that is the area the law simply cannot measure. It's completely invisible to the instrument.
It is the blind spot created by the design of the measurement tool. And this leads us to the mathematical mechanics of the XY mismatch.
Okay, let's hear it.
Let's define our variables. X represents the dimensions of the actual case, the sprawling, messy reality of what happened. Y represents the dimensions of the law, what the legal code is structurally capable of measuring.
So in that $14 theft example, X is massively greater than Y. The case has a high dimensionality, but the law only has the capacity to measure one or two things.
Exactly. And when X is greater than Y, the case is too rich for the law. The judgment spit out by the system might be entirely technically legal, but every human in the room feels that it isn't just.
Because the compression was too severe.
Right. Then you have the inverse scenario, when X is less than Y. This is when the court has overcapacity.
Wait, what does that look like?
Imagine applying the full, complex, multidimensional machinery of a major criminal trial to a parking ticket.
Oh.
The system has provisions for intent, character witnesses, and psychological profiling. But the case just doesn't exercise those dimensions. It produces these very rigid, sometimes absurd bureaucratic outcomes.
Which leaves the rare scenario where X equals Y.
Yes. When the dimensions of the case happen to perfectly match the dimensions the law is looking for, that is the rare moment when observers in the courtroom nod and say, "Justice was served."
But the crucial insight from the research is that this isn't because the system is perfectly capturing reality. It is just a rare, lucky alignment of dimensions.
Precisely. The JPEG actually looked okay because the original scene was very simple to begin with.
Every judge who said, "My hands are tied," was performing a live demonstration of the XY mismatch.
Yeah, exactly.
They are literally feeling the friction of the null space. The system is operating exactly as designed, but the compression is just too aggressive for the human reality sitting in front of them.
It fundamentally changes how we critique our institutions. It moves the conversation away from a simplistic, "the system is broken," to a much more precise diagnosis.
Yeah.
The system is performing a specific type of geometric compression.
Right, because the question isn't whether compression happened, it always does.
Exactly. The vital question is, which dimensions did the system deliberately preserve, and which did it intentionally throw into the null space?
That opens up a massive question. Because if the legal code is a machine that compresses reality, someone had to build that machine. We have to ask who decides which dimensions are kept and which are discarded in that compression.
And when we look globally, we see two major legal traditions making completely opposite engineering choices.
Really? Completely opposite?
Yeah. The Western legal tradition made a highly deliberate choice to drastically reduce dimensions. It optimizes almost entirely for consistency across cases.
Meaning they want equal outcomes.
Uh-huh. Right. The goal is to ensure that a theft by a wealthy person in one city is treated the exact same as a theft by a poor person in another city. To get that consistency, you have to drop the dimensions of social rank and relational context.
I want you to look at the backdrop around us right now. Among all these glowing star charts, there are two massive radar charts hovering side by side.
It really brings it to life.
It's amazing. They're plotting the exact same legal case, but through these two different dimensional designs. On the left, the Western legal chart has these two massive spikes. Fairness and proportionality are just shooting off the charts. But the other six axes, things like relational context, community harmony, victim restoration, social rank, they are sitting dead near zero. It's a jagged, spiky, highly specialized shape.
Justice is blind is not a metaphor. It is a dimensional design specification, and like every design specification, it has a null space.
That's like a wild way to think about it.
By putting on that blindfold, the Western system explicitly says, We will not measure who you are. We will not measure your relationships. We will not measure your broader social context.
Right.
We do this to prevent aristocratic bias and corruption, but the cost is that we become structurally blind to context.
Now look at the radar chart on the right. This represents the Eastern legal tradition, specifically rooted in the concept of Confucian lie.
Yes.
Instead of two massive spikes, this chart shows five moderate values spread evenly across multiple axes. It's measuring social rank, it's measuring the specific relationship between the parties, it's measuring remorse, circumstance, and social harmony.
To really understand this, we have to define what lie actually is.
Okay.
It's often poorly translated simply as rights or customs, but functionally it is a highly structured grammar of social relationships. It measures the space between people.
Oh, I see.
The Eastern tradition preserves those relational dimensions. It optimizes for accuracy to the specific case rather than consistency across all cases. Under this framework, a dispute between a father and son is measured differently than a dispute between two strangers.
Because the relational dimension hasn't been compressed into the null space.
Exactly.
But let me challenge that for a second, because as someone raised in a Western framework, the idea of treating people differently based on their rank or their family relationship, well, it instinctively feels objectively worse.
Sure, it feels biased.
Yeah, it feels like a violation of basic fairness. Does that mean one system is objectively better, or are they just failing in different ways?
They're entirely different engineering trade-offs. Neither is objectively wrong. They just possess completely different null spaces.
Different blind spots.
Right. Western law cannot see context. It is structurally blind to the cascading circumstances that brought a person into the courtroom. Eastern law, to achieve that high-resolution case-specific accuracy, actively sacrifices cross-case consistency.
Meaning you can't guarantee equal treatment.
Exactly. It refuses to ignore the relational context, which means it cannot guarantee equal outcomes for structurally identical acts. You cannot mathematically optimize for both simultaneously.
Wow.
The null space is a feature, not a bug, but we have to be honest about what we are actively choosing not to see.
Okay, let's zoom in on the humans operating inside these machines. You put 12 people in a jury box, and they're supposed to be applying this compressed law. But they are human beings.
Right, they aren't algorithms.
Exactly, they have their own internal measurement instruments.
And human moral evaluation is just as multidimensional as the law itself. The research here leans heavily on Jonathan Haidt's moral foundations theory.
Oh, I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, Kate identified that our moral processing relies on at least six distinct dimensions: care, fairness, loyalty, authority, sanctity, and liberty. The critical finding is that different populations weight these dimensions completely differently in their internal algorithms.
The studies cited in the papers are fascinating. Research from Peng and Nisbet back in 1999, and also Hamilton and Sanders in 1992, they actually tested how different populations process complex moral and legal judgments.
And what they found is amazing. They found that weird populations, that's an acronym for Western, educated, industrialized, rich, and democratic, they heavily weight just two dimensions, care and fairness.
Just two.
Yeah. The other dimensions, like loyalty to a group or sanctity of a tradition, are weighted near zero. But collectivist populations tend to weight five or six of those dimensions quite evenly.
That's a huge difference.
It is. When Peng and Nisbet presented contradictory, complex scenarios to subjects, Americans tended to polarize. They wanted to compress the data until someone was purely guilty or purely innocent.
And the other subjects.
Chinese subjects were much more comfortable retaining the high dimensionality, holding guilt alongside mitigating context simultaneously.
Here's where it gets really interesting. So if a weird jury and a collectivist jury watch the exact same crime and disagree, they aren't arguing over morality. They are literally receiving different signals.
That is the core of it. We often frame these disagreements lazily as moral relativism, as if one group simply prefers a different flavor of justice.
Right, like it's just a preference.
But the framework in these papers defines it strictly as observer heterogeneity. It is spectral metamerism applied to moral judgment.
Wait, let me stop you there. I understand dropping a dimension like community harmony in a legal code. It's written on paper. You can just cross it out.
Right.
But how does an individual juror physically drop a dimension? They're sitting in the box looking at the same human defendant, hearing the exact same audio. How are they blind to it? Let's explain spectral metamerism to make this concrete for everyone.
It comes from color science, and it perfectly answers your question. When light hits an apple, the apple reflects a highly complex physical wave of energy. but your eye doesn't process the whole wave.
Because of our biology.
Exactly. Your eye only has three types of color receptors. Cones for red, green, and blue. Your biological hardware compresses that complex wave into just three numbers.
Okay.
Now imagine a completely different light wave from a completely different object hits your eye, but it happens to trigger your red, green, and blue cones in the exact same ratio.
My brain would tell me they are the exact same color, even though the physical reality of the objects is entirely different.
Precisely. The complexity is hidden by the limits of my hardware.
The observer's hardware creates the illusion of identicalness.
Exactly, the mechanism. Now apply that to a jury. The crime itself is the complex physical wave. It emits signals on all dimensions simultaneously: fairness, loyalty, sanctity, care.
Right.
But the weird juror only has strong receptors for care and fairness. When they look at the situation, their internal measurement instrument projects all that complexity down onto just those two axes.
Oh, wow. And a collectivist juror.
A collectivist juror has active receptors for all six. They are processing the wave differently. The disagreement in the jury room isn't about what is right. It's about what is visible to their specific receptors.
That is profound. And it brings us to a massive, looming reality. We've established that human judges and human juries at least feel the friction of this compression.
Yeah, they squirm in their seats when the law forces them to drop important dimensions.
But what happens when we take this lossy compression, this highly specific dimensional design, and hand it over to artificial intelligence?
This is the critical threshold we are crossing right now. When you train a machine learning algorithm like a risk assessment tool or a sentencing AI on historical legal data, the algorithm doesn't read the philosophy of law.
It trains on the numbers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And those numbers inherit the exact null space of the system that generated them.
So if the law drops the rehabilitation dimension, the AI drops it too.
Without a second thought.
A sentencing algorithm doesn't introduce bias into the law. It inherits the null space the law already had and applies it at scale, without the judge's visible discomfort.
That is the terror of rasterized law at scale. Consider the infamous Compass recidivism algorithm controversy.
Oh yeah, the bias debate.
The debate around it usually centers on the disparate outcomes it produced. But underneath the outcomes, the root of the problem is a dimensionality problem. The AI is optimizing an objective function based on the data it was fed.
Right.
But what dimensions of justice does a prior conviction variable actually contain?
The deeply compressed one-dimensional summary.
Mm-hmm.
A prior conviction data point drops the dimension of the quality of legal representation that person had.
Mm-hmm.
It completely ignores the dimension of demographic policing patterns in their specific neighborhood. It drops the economic context.
And because the machine learning model is mathematically blind to what isn't in its training matrix, it cannot optimize for it. If the historical data dropped rehabilitation or structural context, the AI treats the rasterized, compressed JPEG as if it were the high-resolution RAW file.
It doesn't know there's missing data.
Exactly. If its objective function is simply minimize repeat offenses, it will bulldoze an unmeasured dimension like community harmony to achieve it. It executes that blind spot with terrifying, flawless efficiency.
It doesn't squirm. It doesn't look at the defendant and say, my hands are tied. It just spits out a risk score.
Which brings us to a crucial concept in the research, the delegation boundary.
The delegation boundary.
When we bring AI into legal decision making, we fundamentally misunderstand its role if we just treat it as a faster calculator. AI is brilliant at execution. It is incredible at finding hidden correlations within the dimensions it is given.
Right. But it has limits.
Yes, the delegation boundary dictates what we mathematically cannot hand over to the machine.
Because the machine can't invent a dimension it wasn't given.
No, it can't. The critical human contribution on the other side of the delegation boundary is specifying which dimensions the system should encode in the first place.
Like deciding what matters.
Exactly. Deciding that rehabilitation must be a mathematically measured variable, or that relational context matters. That specification is not a technical parameter. It is a fundamental human values commitment.
It's a moral stance on what justice actually is.
Yeah.
And you cannot let a machine optimize it for you.
You really can't.
So what does this all mean? If we're currently operating in a system that enforces a severe dimensional compression, and we are on the verge of supercharging that compressed system with AI, how do we fix the XY mismatch? Are we just doomed to live in the null space?
Not at all. In fact, if you look closely, society is already pushing back against this compression, even if we don't always use the mathematical terminology for it.
I see what you mean. The source material highlights movements like restorative justice, therapeutic jurisprudence, and specialized problem-solving courts.
Like drug courts or veterans courts.
Exactly. In the news, we usually talk about those as progressive policy experiments. But under the framework we've built today, they are something much more structural. They are dimensional recovery programs.
That's the perfect way to phrase it. They're actively attempting to increase Y to match X.
Right.
A standard court compresses a drug offense down to a binary, guilt and punishment. A specialized drug court explicitly adds the dimension of psychological well-being, addiction science, and temporal rehabilitation.
And a restorative justice circle adds the dimensions of victim restoration and community harmony back into the matrix.
Yes. They are redesigning the measurement instrument so it can see the human dimensions that standard criminal procedure threw into the null space.
They are trying to pull the color and the depth back into the JPEG. They're looking at the null space and saying, we actually need that information back if we're going to call this justice.
And understanding that requires a massive shift in how we evaluate the systems that govern us. We have to stop asking the impossible question, is this system perfectly just? And start asking the engineering question, which dimensions of human reality is this system structurally blind to?
It's a lens that completely changes how you look at any system of evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if the dimensionality framing resonates, episode 23 asks where the delegation boundary sits when AI enters any evaluation system, not just legal ones.
Huh.
And if you want to see the same diagnosis applied to scientific publishing, that's episode 26.
This problem of observer hardware and lossy compression is everywhere once you know how to look for it.
It really is.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we spent all this time talking about the null space of massive legal and technological systems. But this raises an important question about your own personal judgments in your workplace, in your relationships, or in your politics.
Oh, that's a brilliant point.
When you make a decisive, rapid judgment about someone today, what dimensions of the other person's reality are falling into your own personal null space?
What a provocative thought to end on, because we all have our own biological blindfolds on, don't we? We're all just compressing the raw files of the people around us into low-res JPEGs just to get through the day. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Take that question with you. Think about the XYLE mismatches in your own life, those moments where your judgment might be technically correct, but the reality is so much richer than your rules can express. Keep exploring the dimensions of your world. We'll see you next time.